Good morning. So we're going to start this morning by talking about movies, all right? Movies, because I think there are a lot of things, a lot of qualities that go into making a truly great movie. Script has to be profoundly written. The soundtrack has to be moving. And the characters must be compelling. However, you could make the case that perhaps what is the most important factor for making a good movie great is the casting. The casting. The actors who are chosen to play these roles, to bring these characters that are on paper, to bring those characters into life, they can make or break a movie, right? Just for a moment, think about your favorite movie. Okay, imagine in your mind your favorite movie. And then imagine the protagonist of that movie being played by someone totally different. Let's pick someone random, okay? Bill Murray, okay? Imagine your protagonist being played. Now, this is a great actor, right? But could he play that role? So my favorite movie of all time is Rocky II, okay? Now, could Bill Murray play that role? No, it's got to be Sly, right? It has to be. Well, I've been doing a little research this week, and I've come up with some casting changes that you may have never known about. Casting changes that have probably changed the landscape of American cinema. Do you want to know what some of those are? Okay, so the movie The Shining. You remember the movie The Shining? Everyone see that one? Okay. So can you imagine the movie The Shining, but in place of this disturbing Jack Nicholson, the character was played by Robin Williams? Because Robin Williams was originally cast in that role. The director, Stanley Kubrick, thought that Robin Williams was just a little too zany to play that role, right? What about Dirty Harry? You guys know Dirty Harry. No one could possibly play that role of Dirty Harry like Clint Eastwood, right? Well, the role was originally designed for Frank Sinatra. But Frank Sinatra hurt his wrist filming another movie right before this, and so he literally could not hold that 44 Magnum gun that Dirty Harry is so famous for. Would have been a totally different movie. There are few roles as iconic as Arnold Schwarzenegger in Terminator. But did you know that the original actor cast to play this role was not Arnold, but was O.J. Simpson? Now listen to this. The director, James Cameron, changed the cast because he didn't think that, he couldn't imagine O.J. Simpson playing the role of a killer. True story, okay? One of my favorite movies, Shawshank Redemption. I mean, it's like in the top five movies of all time. And I love that character of Andy Dufresne, played by Tim Robbins. But he was not the original cast. The original cast was Kevin Costner. Would have totally changed the movie, right? Kevin Costner actually turned that role down to play in Waterworld. So he turned down one of the top five movies of all time to play one of the bottom five movies of all time, right? Last one. The epic hero, and you guys know Seth Carnell, our media guy, this is his icon, Indiana Jones. Okay, Indiana Jones, one of the best movie series of all time. Harrison Ford played that role perfectly, but it wasn't originally written for him. The person originally cast in that role, anybody know? Tom Selleck. Tom Selleck, can you believe that? Would have totally changed the role, changed the movie altogether. Who knows if it would have gone on to be such a classic as it is now. Tom Selleck was actually, he had already committed to Magnum PI, and so he couldn't make them both work. Casting. Casting is crucial. You have to have the right people in the right places. And our story this morning is about casting. It's about the role that each of us has to play. We're in this series together called The Questions That Jesus Asked, where we look at a question that Jesus asked someone in Scripture, and then we also try and hear that question asked anew and fresh to us. And our question this morning is this: what is that to you? That's Jesus' question. It doesn't mean a lot as it stands by itself, and so let's unpack the context in which Jesus asked that question: what is that to you? So the context of the story, the passage that Mike read for us this morning, is from the book of John, and it's the very last chapter, it's the very last verses from John 21. This is the way that the Apostle John ends his gospel, is with these verses. So Jesus has died, Jesus has been raised, he's meeting with his disciples who had largely abandoned him just days before. And he is now having that famous interaction that we know that he has with Peter, where he says to Peter three times, "Peter, do you love me?" And Peter says, "Yes, Jesus, I love you," at three times, to kind of overturn the denial that Peter had done against Jesus just days before. And so in this moment, it's a very sweet moment between Jesus and Peter, where Jesus is kind of strengthening and encouraging and recommissioning Peter and saying, "Hey, that denial is behind us, and now you're ready to move forward." It's a very sweet scripture, one that we all know well, and our sermons usually stop there. They usually stop right there, but we're going to press on this morning into the verses right after that because they are kind of odd and very challenging. After Jesus encourages Peter and recommissions him, Jesus, in a veiled way, gives Peter a glimpse into what Peter's role will look like moving forward. He says this to Peter: "When you were young, you used to dress yourself and walk wherever you wanted. But when you are old, you will stretch out your hands, and another will dress you and carry you where you are not able to go." It says right here in this passage, this Jesus said to show by what kind of death Peter was to glorify God. Stretch out your hands. That's what Jesus tells Peter. You will stretch out your hands. Now, that's a manner of speaking that clearly communicates, it's a way of conveying the message that Peter would face crucifixion. And that was all too clear in Peter's mind that day, as he walked, just 3 days after Jesus had been crucified. And Jesus still is bearing those scars on his hands. It's all too familiar in Peter's mind, those words, "stretch out your hands." Peter knew exactly what Jesus was talking about. Jesus was saying, "Peter, you too will be crucified. You will die on a cross." There's some early writings that we have written shortly after the Gospels that tell us about Peter's martyrdom. There's even a legend you're maybe familiar with that says that Peter, when he was about to be crucified on a cross, said, "I don't count myself worthy to be crucified in the same way that Jesus was, and so please crucify me upside down." It's kind of this classic Christian legend. But we know that Peter was martyred for his faith. And it's here in this story that he receives that sobering news. "Peter, you are going to face martyrdom. You will suffer and die on behalf of the gospel." As Peter is processing this very heavy news that he has just heard about his future, he looks back over his shoulder. See, he and Jesus are walking along, and Peter looks back over his shoulders, and it says that he sees John. Now, who knows if all the disciples were walking behind Peter and Jesus, but what we know is that Peter fixes his eyes on John, and he asks Jesus, "Jesus, what about him? What about this guy? What about John? What's going to happen to John?" Now, John and Peter have a history together. Not only have they been following Jesus together these years, but they knew each other well before Jesus. Peter and John are both part of two sets of brothers. Peter and Andrew were brothers, and James and John were brothers. And the Bible tells us that the four of them were partners in the fishing business before they ever knew Jesus. The four of these brothers have a long history together. Peter and John would go on to be a part of Jesus's inner circle. It was often Peter, James, and John. We presume, just from what we read about John, that he was significantly younger than the other disciples. Maybe as young as 15 when he first started following Jesus. We know that Peter, however, was an adult. At the Last Supper, we see John, this kind of young, you can picture him, young teenager, leaning back against Jesus at the Last Supper. John, in his gospel, regularly refers to himself as the disciple who Jesus loved. That's how he refers to himself. So Peter, after he hears this very sobering news, looks back over his shoulder and he sees his little brother, John. And he says, as he ponders his own imminent death, he asks Jesus, "What about him, Jesus?" Well, Jesus gives a response that would end up confusing people for generations. He says this, "If it is my will that John remain until I come, what is that to you?" In other words, Peter, if I wanted John to miraculously live on for generations and generations and generations, what does that have to do with you? Now, we know that John, of course, didn't go on to live generations and generations and generations, but we do know this, that John lived, he started out as the youngest of all the disciples, he went on to outlive all of the others. He was the only disciple who wasn't martyred. John lived to be an old man and an old pastor, pastoring the people of Ephesus, writing many books and encouraging letters to his people, and he died a natural death. He was a thoughtful writer, giving us 1st, 2nd, and 3rd John, the book of Revelation, and his gospel, and he died a pastor to the people in Ephesus. But this story isn't really about John, is it? It's not really about the role that John had to play. This story is about Peter. Peter's question when he asks about John, "What about him, Jesus?" is less about John and more about Peter. "Really, Jesus? I have to suffer and die? This is my role?" Certainly that possibility had occurred to Peter before, right? I mean, he had said it in his more or less words in the Gospels, "Jesus, I will follow you to death." But in this moment, Jesus has just signed the check. Said, "Peter, this is what's going to happen to you. This is where you are headed, death. This is the role that you have to play." Well, Peter would naturally ask about the others, especially the one that Jesus loved. Surely they will die too, right? No, Peter. John may live forever, or at least to be an old man. You see, in that moment, Jesus never meant to say anything definite about what would happen to John. He just meant to say something definite about how it was none of Peter's business. And you can feel in that moment the jealousy that Peter has and the conviction setting in simultaneously. His question to Peter is, "What is that to you?" This is a question about envy and about jealousy. It's about two really important people who each had a role to play, but their roles were very different. And Peter was asking the question, is the casting right? Are you sure, Jesus, that this casting is right? Are you sure that I die and that he lives? This doesn't seem fair. Well, it's at this point in our sermon, as we do in each of these sermons about Jesus' questions, where we try and hear Jesus' question asked anew to us. What is that to you? What is that to you? In what ways do we relate to Peter this morning? In what ways do we find ourselves looking around our lives, looking at the people around us and saying, hold on, Jesus, what about them? This isn't fair. Do you ever feel like you've been cast in the wrong role? When you look around your life, are you unhappy with where you're at? Do you look at the roles that others have been cast in, and do you envy them or even detest them? Maybe it has to do with your role at work. You look at a coworker who seems to always be one step ahead of you. They just seem to be naturally successful. They get the promotions ahead of you, and you feel like you deserve more. You are working hard, and you've earned it. Maybe it has to do more with your role at home. You look around at others in your life who seem to just have more. Maybe they have a spouse, and you don't. Maybe they have kids, and you don't. Maybe they have money and nice things, and you don't. Maybe their kids are successful and well-behaved, and yours aren't, and you are envious of their role. I was just talking to my grandma the other day. My grandma is 93, and basically a shut-in. You know, she rarely leaves the house, and she's been a lifelong Christian, and she's now asking herself, what is my role? What is my role? And she's looking at others around her who are very active and doing really great things, and she's saying, why do I have this role? And what does it look like for me to follow Jesus in this role? We're often envious of others and their role. Why wasn't I given a role like that, we say, Jesus? Why doesn't my family look more like that, Jesus? Maybe some of you here this morning have been cast in a particularly difficult role. Maybe your health or the health of someone around you, someone in your family is failing and the care rests only on your shoulders. Maybe you've faced a major setback at work or been laid off. Maybe close relationships in your life have deteriorated and you feel isolated and alone. Look, these are incredibly difficult roles to play. But remember, Peter was given a really difficult role to play too. He had just learned that he was going to face a martyr's death. And Peter was looking around himself just like we do and saying, this doesn't seem right. This doesn't seem fair. Look, I'm not going to stand up here this morning and tell you that the role that God has for you is better than the role that God has for someone else, because it does not feel like that a lot of the time, does it? But it's still your role. It's still my role. God has placed you and I there, and he has gifted us to play that role. Jesus asked Peter that question, what is that to you? And he asks it to us this morning. What is that to you? As you look around the others in your life, he's saying, what is that to you? I think that many of Jesus' questions kind of gently peel back the layers, but I don't think this is one of them. This question, I think, cuts deep. But Jesus doesn't want to leave us in that place of just kind of despair and conviction. His message to Peter isn't, look, Peter, don't look at John. His message to Peter is instead, look to me. Look at me. What is that to you, Peter? You follow me. This is the second time in the passage that Mike read where Jesus says to Peter, follow me. He's driving the point home. Following Jesus should be our primary concern. How can we fulfill the role that he has given you, me, to play? It may be easy for us to dream up how we could play the role of someone else really well, right? It may be easy for me to dream up the role, how I could fulfill the role of like super charismatic pastor of a mega church, right? But that's not my role. It may be easy for you to imagine how you would fulfill the role of CEO of your company, very successful. It may be easy for you to dream up how you would fulfill the role of the parent of perfect children, but that's oftentimes not our role. We have to fix our eyes on him. What does it look like for us to follow Jesus in the role that we're in right now? And he may have us play different roles in the future, but our focus should be on following Jesus in the role that we have now. And when we fix our eyes on him and not on the people around us, we find ourselves caught up in his story. We find ourselves as characters in his story. Many times we look with puzzlement and envy at others and we wish we could swap places. But part of being a Christian, part of Christian obedience, is knowing that we're called to follow Jesus wherever he leads us, not wherever he leads the people next to us. Furthermore, when we ask Jesus these questions, when we challenge him like that, it calls into question the director himself, right? What does it say about what we think about God when we're so consumed with the roles that other people have? We shouldn't trouble ourselves a great deal with the role that God has given to others, what they might do, how effective they may be, or the quality of their character. The director knows what he is doing. And God does not make casting mistakes. Each of our roles will be different, and it's easy for us to get focused on each other's roles. Instead, our focus should remain on Jesus himself. He tells us, "Keep following me." Jesus alone is our master. To him we belong, and to him we must give account. We are to live our lives looking to Jesus. I want to close our time this morning, the message time this morning, by just pausing before we kind of go on to the next movement of worship. And then when it's all over, we just run out of this building. We're just going to do as we've done the last couple of weeks and pause for a moment of reflection. There's these cards here in your weekly news. And so if you, like me, are kind of a tactile person, I encourage you, we're just going to take 60 seconds here to close our time. And I want you to reflect on not on the roles that the people around you have, but the role that you have. What is the role that you are playing this morning? And what does it look like for you to follow Jesus in that role? And if it's helpful for you to like take this and scribble down a word or a phrase or an idea or even a brief prayer to God about that role, I encourage you to do that. So just take 60 seconds here and reflect on that idea.